calling pension reform and downtown progress big wins for his administration. Just ahead, Mayor Alvin Brown makes one last stop by Studio 5 and takes your calls. Good Wednesday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. The show is always live at 9, and now catch our daily podcast on iTunes. Just ahead, in his final appearance on the show while he's still in office, Mayor Alvin Brown looks back on his tenure and takes your calls. What are your questions? You can get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, the North Florida Land Trust on their climate change toolkit. That's in today's Going Green, plus summer safety tips from Baptist Health for parents. All of that ahead. But first this morning, Jacksonville Mayor Alvin Brown has just a few days left as he closes out his term in office, and he's highlighting accomplishments over the last 4 years as he prepares to hand over the reins to new Mayor Lenny Curry. Chief among them, the city's pension deal and downtown progress. Mayor Alvin Brown, thanks for being with us. Good morning.
Thanks for having me, Melissa. Happy to be here.
And what are your questions and comments for Mayor Brown as he closes out his term? 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet the show. We're already getting your comments on Facebook, and we'll go to those in just a moment. And so, after a hard-fought campaign, you close out your term in office, reflecting on the last 4 years. And I know that pension reform was chief among your goals for accomplishment when you were elected 4 years ago. Your thoughts as that deal finally did close out and get passed by the city council in the final days of your term?
Sure. It's a long process. I made it a top priority, as you said, and I'm very happy for the hardworking taxpayers of Jacksonville to now finally have, a great pension reform done. And it took a lot of people to make it happen. It took a team effort. I appointed a pension task force, which was led by Bill Shai. 17-member task force, which was great. So Bill Shai, Councilman Bill Gulliford led the efforts to get us across the finish line. So that was good. I really appreciate his leadership. And the Civic Council endorsed it. And so, everybody worked hard on this. And it was the right thing to do for the city. My team, my staff did a good job, led by my chief of staff, Chris Hand, did a phenomenal job. Leading the charge, making sure that we were focused on this, and Dave DeCamp, who, golly, I can't tell you how many messaging points that he put out about communicating pension reform, and it's good for the taxpayers. It's going to save $1.5 billion over 30 years, which is important for a city. And at the end of the day, it supports the first responders, right? Being fair to the taxpayers, but also our first responders, and making sure we're able to recruit, retain the best first responders that any city would love to have.
549-2937, and we'll go to your calls for outgoing Mayor Alvin Brown in just a moment. So pension reform was at the top of your list. Also, two other initiatives you really championed during your 4 years, downtown development and sports and entertainment.
Sure.
What are your thoughts about, do you feel that you moved the ball forward on those fronts?
Absolutely. When you think about it, 4 years ago, Melissa, there was a debate on whether or not we should invest in downtown. That was a serious debate 4 years ago, really heated debate. And now we have a downtown investment authority. We now have downtown doing extremely well. More people are living downtown, working downtown. Downtown is a top priority for all the key stakeholders in this city, the chamber, the civic council, the city council. A lot of the folks now believe that downtown is a top priority, and it's moving forward. And when you really think about it, the shipyard is going to move forward. Healthy Town has been announced, a shipyard. Those two projects that DIA will be working on. And then think about Riverside, right? 220. You have a Fresh Market grocery store. You have a corner bakery. You have 600 housing units. All of those things are so important for our city. And so downtown is doing extremely well, and I'm very excited about it. Making it a destination, not just for the residents, but visitors alike, and I'm really very proud about that. That's going to be something that's going to improve the quality of life for everyone in this city.
Do you see those two accomplishments as your legacy as mayor, the pension deal and downtown development?
Well, I see those being part of it. Also, sports and entertainment and military affairs. When you really think about it, I elevated military affairs to a cabinet post, appointed a two-star admiral, Vic Guillory, the first cabinet member, launched some key programs and partnerships, job for veterans, putting veterans back to work, closing and really trying to eradicate homelessness among veterans, working with the Jacksonville Veterans Coalition, created a Week of Valor, and made Jacksonville the number one most military-friendly city in the country. And now it's now everybody's trying to help veterans in Jacksonville, the nonprofit community like Salzbarker Center, the Homeless Coalition. I'm very proud of that. So taking something that was basically a ceremonial office and making it a cabinet position, a department, investing in it, I think is good. And then sports and entertainment. You know, I'm big on sports and entertainment, bringing more sports to town, more activities to town, Rockville, USA, Country Superfest. Love that. And then, you know, now we have a professional soccer team, Armada. And so I think the NBA exhibition game, all of these things improve the quality of life that I think are important. And education, when you think about it, I appointed the first commissioner of education in the history of Jacksonville for $1, thanks to Jacksonville University. And we launched some good programs that I think that are so important for any city to have, the mayor's mentors, mentoring young people, the summer jobs and learn to earn, a college immersion program, exposing young people to the possibility of going to college by living on a college campus in the summertime, having a summer job, learning and earning, teaching them accountability, responsibility, and giving them opportunity, keeping them off the street. So I think, you know, years to come down the road, 20 years from now, people are going to reflect back on, wow, downtown is thriving. That was the right investment. It was the right thing to do. Pension reform was the right thing to do. You know, sports and entertainment, making Jacksonville a destination was the right thing to do. Investing in all the neighborhoods, with Renew Jacks, for example, a $40 million economic development plan. So, but I think in the end, it will be those things and jobs. Remember when I came in, the number one issue, people questioned whether or not, you know, Jacksonville will get back on his feet when it comes to jobs. And we cut unemployment in half. More people are working now. The economy is thriving. We diversify our portfolio. We went out and worked with a lot of stakeholders to make this city a great place to live, work, and raise a family. So I'm excited about the future. I think it's great for the city. And we did it with the nonprofit community, which we have the best nonprofit community in America. We did it with the business community, with civic community, and, you know, the faith-based community. We work together no matter what. And I think that's a lot to be said by working with everyone in the city to make a difference for the community.
And we'll go to your calls for outgoing Mayor Alvin Brown in just a moment at 549-2937. As you talk about your accomplishments over the last 4 years, I'm sure you're also reflecting on mistakes made and what you might have done differently. As you look at the campaign, you lost by a narrow margin to new Mayor Lenny Curry. What do you think you would do differently? Why do you think you lost the election?
Well, you know, I haven't really reflect on the campaign, to be honest with you. I'll do that when I leave office and take some time in July and hang out with the family and then reflect. But, you know, I am very proud of the things we were able to accomplish. I think that as a city, you know, we did all the right things. I kept my promise. You know, I appointed a bipartisan administration, Democrats and Republicans working together. We united the city, didn't divide the city, very upbeat and positive. And I think, you know, we did all the right things. No mayor can do it alone. It takes all of us working together. You know, and so I'm going to take time to reflect back when once I leave. I've been working 14, 15 hours a day, Melissa. So, and I'm very happy. You know, I went to Washington, made the case like I did in 2011 for TAGA grant. We got $10 million working with Ray LaHood. I went up last week and met with Secretary Fox, making a case for Jacksonville. Met with the Justice Department, had them here, the focus on public safety, Justice Department and gang units. So I think once I walk away from the office. I'll have a chance to reflect back on what worked, what didn't work. But I got to say to all the people out there, all of the for Jacksonville, I thank God for blessing me with this opportunity. He gave me 4 years. I kept my promises. I feel good about it. And the best is yet to come.
Speaking of which, what are your future plans? You do have deep contacts up in Washington, stemming from your time in the Clinton administration and other jobs. Are you planning another political move, maybe outside of Jacksonville?
Well, I know one thing I'm going to do. I miss my son's spring break because I was running hard. And, you know, we're going to go to Disney World.
Literally going to go to Disney World.
I got to have some fun with the family. You know, I got to really spend some time with the boys. My youngest just turned 13. So we have two teenagers now, and I really got to spend time with the family.
But then after that, what are your plans?
So then I get a chance to think about what I want to do, right? I want to take July and maybe longer to figure out what I want to do in the short term and then in the long term, what makes sense.
Do you hope to run for Congress?
Oh, my goodness. I'm not even thinking about office, running for any office.
Really?
Nothing.
Nothing.
I mean, I'm not giving anything any thought about that, to be honest with you.
Well, let's go to your calls for outgoing Mayor Alvin Brown at 549-2937. Alex in Lakewood. Go ahead, Alex. You're on the air.
Okay. Good morning, Melissa. Good morning, Mayor Brown. This is just a comment, you know, that I want to make. I think I know part of the reason why Mayor Brown lost the election, and I think part of it is because he lost credibility. I lost my credibility in him after, you know, his stance, you know, on gay marriage, on the city ordinance. And I take my comments off the air.
Okay, thanks, Alex. Let's gay talk marriage. About that issue. I think he's referring more to the human rights ordinance, whether to expand that in Duval County. That's something that came up during the campaign. Do you think that cost you votes among some of your base?
I don't think so. I mean, I don't think, I can't say, but I don't think that way. I think, you know, you make your case, you go to the people, you make your case, and, you know, people have an opportunity to do what they think is right.
Political observers of your campaign saw that you were caught between two opposing parts of your base, African-American Democrats who might not be as supportive of the HRO and white progressives who really wanted you to make a statement supporting the HRO. As you look back, was it difficult to thread that needle politically?
No, I mean, I think I made it very clear. And I think this is what I'm very proud of, being authentic and honest with people. You know, I said, you know, I directed the Office of General Counsel to review anti-discrimination laws that are on the book for the LGBT community, for all communities, you know, just review everything. And, you know, I'm very proud of that. I think, you know, people want leaders who are going to be forthright and honest with them. And we did that.
And it's 549-2937 to join the show. Jess in Arlington. Hi, Jess. Good morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to tell Mayor Brown that this conservative Republican thinks he did a good job. I'm sorry he's not going to be our mayor. I voted for him. And I just wanted to take an opportunity to say, good job, Mayor Brown. That's all. Thank you.
That's Jess calling from Arlington.
Well, I really appreciate that. You know, I'm thankful to God that we were able to work with Democrats and Republicans. Remember, I didn't get involved in any campaign, any races when I, as mayor, I thought it was important to have an office that's nonpartisan and really work with everyone. Unite the city, work with everybody. You know, I think we all want the same thing. We want to be able to send our kids to college and take care of the family, get a good education, and show, you know, show America that, you know what, it's not about party politics. It's really about people. Mm-hmm. It's about the quality of life. It's about really making sure that everyone reach their God-given potential and have a beloved community, and that's what it's about.
And you did govern in a bipartisan manner. Your successor, Lenny Curry, has pledged to do the same. Let me ask you, though, as a follow-up, a guy like Jess said he voted for you as a conservative Republican. You came up short, though, among suburban Republican voters in Duval County. How much of that do you think was due to partisanship or just perhaps differences with the way you governed?
Well, I don't I can tell you, I can't talk about the campaign because I ran a very positive. I'm going to reflect back on that later. But I governed and brought everyone together. And I think that's important. Everyone has to make a decision on how they want to run their campaign. I ran an honest, upbeat, positive campaign. I'm very proud of that. But in terms of governing, I did work with everybody. I work with Governor Rick Scott. I work with, you know, Congresswoman Corrine Brown and Bill Nelson, Senator Bill Nelson. I work with, you know, a lot of stakeholders, appointed individuals in my administration, Democrats and Republicans, you know, Mario Rubio, Karen Boland, you know, Paul Martinez, all of these individuals who served in my administration, Glenn Hansen, all Republicans came in and, you know, and Democrats as well. Chris Hand worked for Bob Graham, Tony Hill, former state senator, Mia Jones, a state rep. So the whole goal was to bring in talented people who believe in this city, love this city, and care about this city. And, you know, my supporters were bipartisan. So I think you have to do that. I ran on that promise, and I kept my promise. And again, I think at the end of the day, people are going to look back and history will show that it was the right thing to do. We need to get away from partisan politics and do what's right. You know, no one is born in America and say, oh, I'm going to just, you know, work with one side of one group of people. The key is to work with everyone. And we did that.
When you talk about your bipartisan outreach, in particular, as you said, you reached out repeatedly to Governor Scott, worked with him on economic development initiatives for this part of the state. How disappointing was it for you when he endorsed your opponent?
Well, I knew, you know, I wasn't disappointed. I was a little surprised, but, you know, that's what they do, you know. Governor Scott he had to do it. But in spite of that, when you really think about it, at the end of the day, we're able to work together to, you know, 36,000 new jobs in Jacksonville, work together to bring companies like GE and Ambria here to Jacksonville. And so I think the most important thing is, how do you make things happen for your community? And we were able to do that. When it comes down to politics, again, you know, I'll reflect back on that in July and August and during the summer. But I feel good that I kept my promise to the voters. Anybody could go and say, you know, Mayor Brown, when you ran 4 years ago, you said you're going to work with everybody. You weren't going to be involved in any campaigns. And, you know, I kept my promise. I kept my word. And I think there's something, there's value in doing that.
549-2937. Gus is in Jacksonville. Hi, Gus. Go ahead. Hey, Gus. Are you there? All right, Gus.
Maybe.
Go ahead,
Carl?
Gus. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, this is Josiah Burden.
Okay. They're telling me name's Gus. Sorry about that. Go ahead, Josiah.
No problem. I wanted to know, why didn't Mayor Brown meet with Barack Obama when he came to Jacksonville, Florida? And it was also said in the community that I believe it's Sean Barack Obama. I wanted to know, why didn't he meet with the president when he came to Jacksonville?
Okay, thanks for that call, Gus. That came up after the election. Some voters saying that really bothered them, that you wouldn't appear on a stage with the president. What about that?
So I think that's missed information. So when he was here at one time, I wasn't here. I was in Philadelphia with the U.S. Conference of Mayors with the First Lady Michelle Obama. And then when he came to Jacksonville, I was at the airport, met him at the airport. And then he went to the port, and we were at a port event. So I think there is some misinformation out there about that.
Did you feel that it might be politically damaging for you to be seen
on
the
same
stage?
Not at all. I mean, I've
worked
with the president. I've seen him. I don't think that's the case. I think people perpetuate something that's not real.
Dilly in Jacksonville. Go ahead, Dilly.
Yes, ma'am. Hi, my name's I'm sorry.
And the numbers show that.
Yep. Thank you for talking with you.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, and I was just wondering if you knew if Mayor Lindy Curry had any more ideas about building up the integrity of the inner city, like the West Side and the East Side, and also if he had any ideas on investing time in the youth of the community, you know, just to kind of try to help change their minds so that they can be productive and committed members of the community.
Okay, thanks for the call. And he's just talking about how you think the new mayor will work on efforts in the urban core.
Well, I think he's committed to that. He said that. And so he made it very clear he wanted to see all of Jacksonville do well. And he stated that he wants to make sure that, all of Jacksonville prosper. So I believe he's going to do that. He's going to keep his commitment. He can build on Renew Jacks that we started in Northwest Jacksonville and in Arlington and the East Side. It's a $40 million economic development plan for housing and infrastructure on Soutelle Drive, Avenue B, Kings Road, where Newtown is, Everett Waters College, the East Side, where C.B. Richard Daley Villas will be, right next to the Children's Commission in Renew Arlington, a great program for Renew Jacks right there by Jacksonville University. I think he's going to do all of those things and build on that. He committed to investing in all of Jacksonville.
And lots of calls, emails, tweets, and Facebook comments for outgoing Mayor Alvin Brown. What are your thoughts and questions and comments at 549-2937? Matthew on the north side. Go ahead, Matthew.
Yes, I just wanted to congratulate Mayor Brown on his administration and efforts to the small business community in Jacksonville. I'm a small business owner, and through his administration, we've had a lot of really good programs, a lot of information, a lot of people that they brought in and gave us a lot of information to help our businesses, especially during import and export, and just all of the connections that were made, and they're partnering with UNF and I really appreciate it. I know there's been a lot of, some negative stuff said, but to me, that was one of the best parts of his administration was their dedication to the small businesses in Jacksonville and really caring about us and wanting us to succeed. So thanks, Mayor. I appreciate that.
That's Matthew on the north side.
Very welcome. We launched a program called Business Builders with JSEP, reaching out to small business and entrepreneurs, making sure that they had access to capital and credit. And marketing and really educating them on how to work with to attract and really grow in terms of small business. And, the port, as he talked about export and import, I'm the chairman for the U.S. Conference of Mayors of Export and Import. Port was a big deal.
Speaking of that, let me jump in. How do you see Jacksport getting that dredging project done? How will the money be raised for that if that goes through?
Well, I think, we have great task force led by John Baker and Hap Stein. And, they'll look at options on funding. I think that's going to happen. I think the federal government's going to do their part. The governor committed to his part. And I think the local will come. I think you'll see some great options on funding for the local share. There is already a game plan and validate the importance of exporting through the J.P. Morgan Chase Brookings Institute Global City Initiative that Jacksonville we secured. And so it shows you the opportunity for small and medium-sized company exports to create jobs. When that happens, when the dredging, when the deepening of the river happens.
And you think it's a when, not an if.
Oh, it's a when. It's going to happen, I think, because they're taking a really balanced approach, working with the environmental community and the business community, all working together to make sure there's a balanced approach to deepening the harbor to protect the environment, I think is important. But, if you think about Jacksonville exports, right now the national average is about 7.4%. And for Jacksonville, and the national average is about 13%. If we just get to 13%, that'll be an $8 billion economic impact with 40,000 new jobs. So I think they're going to take a balanced approach. You got a good task force and great leadership with Hap Stein and John Baker. I'm very proud of that that process, and it's going to be good for Jacksonville in the long term. We have to position the city to compete in a global economy, helping our small business and entrepreneurs, and that's important.
Dale in Avondale. Hi, Dale. Go ahead.
Thank you. Mayor Brown, thank you for your service, first of all. I'd like to ask you a question in regards to your handling of the sheriff and the whole, the outgoing sheriff and the whole debate with the funding of the sheriff's office. Why was there not a firmer hint taken with the sheriff's department in regards to the budget? Simply because of the fact that we knew that the sheriff's office personnel-wise was top heavy, and that was something that was actually in effect before Sheriff Rutherford came into office. But it was also made to look as though that you were withholding funds from fighting crime when we knew that that would be like the last thing that you would want to do. Also, and this is just my opinion, I'll take your comments off the air, it seems as though that for the last few years, the sheriff did little or nothing in regards to crime in the urban core of this city. And with that, you know, we had a spiraling murder rate and crime overall in this city, and it seems as though that the sheriff's department did nothing to try and, you know, alleviate some of these things. It was just incredible to watch. If I didn't live here in this city, I would not have believed it myself. And like I said, I'll take my comments off the air. Thank you.
Dale, thanks. Public safety. Lenny Curry hammered your administration on its record on public safety, and it seemed to be a winning campaign issue with some voters. Looking back, how do you assess the way you handled that issue?
Well, I think it was unfortunate for the sheriff to say that we cut 147 officers. And unfortunately, the TU came out and dissect that and show that the administration did not cut 147 police officers. And that was very clear. It's very unfortunate. You know, in the pen.
Do you wish you had been more forceful in pushing back against
that? Well, I was. I think I did. I focused on prevention and intervention. And I think people know that. We're smart. But, you know, people got to remember the sheriff was looking at running for mayor. He looked at the race. I think that played a major role. And, you know, the one thing I would hope and pray that someday we take partisan politics out of the sheriff's office. In some communities, you know, they're not active politically. And I think that's part of the challenge when you have an elected official who's over public safety. I think that's part of the problem.
You think the sheriff should be appointed, not elected?
Well, I think there has to be a way where they should be working with the mayor no matter what.
What about the Jacksonville Journey? New Mayor Curry saying in his transition meetings that he's going to bring that initiative back to get at the root causes, or in some form or fashion. Not that it ever fully went away, but really bring some of those initiatives back, looking at the root causes to prevent and intervene with kids before crime rates spiral out of control.
So that's another area that was misleading. I mean, before I came in the office, the Jacksonville Journey was $30 million. And when I came, so it was $30 million when I got in, it was just under $11 million. And, you know, city council wanted to get rid of it. And so those programs, many of those programs went over to the Jacksonville Children's Commission. Today, Team Up is over at the Jacksonville Children's Commission.
And you're saying that was the council's decision?
To cut the fundings? Absolutely. We can send you all the – every year, if you look at what my budget proposed, it wasn't wiping out the Jacksonville Journey. But a lot of those programs still exist today. And that's why I launched some other programs, the Mayor's Mentors, the Urban Park Initiative, the Summer Jobs, all of the things, and work with the nonprofit community because I didn't want to reinvent the wheel. But you have the Boys and Girls Club, the YMCA, you know, Team Up, and all these other nonprofit and faith-based community organizations that are doing an extremely good job. The Family Foundation, led by Dawn Lockhart, we've all worked together. And really made the investments for young people and after-school programs.
Here, let's go to your social media comments on Twitter. Is there any project the mayor wishes had come together that did not?
Well, you know, I believe that the projects that I really wanted to come together are happening. The shipyard is going to happen now that the DIA voted and moved forward on Shad Khan's vision for the shipyard. Healthy Towns is going to move forward. The one project that I really want to make sure continues, that's my NBA exhibition game. I want to one day have an NBA team in Jacksonville, Florida. I think it would be great to have an NBA team. The city is ripe for it. So hopefully, you know, maybe 5 to 10 years from now, we'll have our own NBA basketball team in Jacksonville.
And you mentioned a Healthy Town developer, Peter Rummel, behind that project on the South Bank. Why do you think he withdrew his support from you after helping fund your campaign in 2011 and switched his money and his support, along with a few other influential guys around town, to Lenny Curry?
Well, I think he said why. I'm not going to repeat why he said that he's not supporting me. But look, campaign's over with, politics over it. I wish Peter well. I want Healthy Town to be very successful. I think it's great for the city. But, you know, he made it very clear why he didn't want to support me this time. But I don't want to repeat those words.
Here's a comment on our Facebook page. Do you regret letting the Florida Democratic Party handle your messaging and campaign structure rather than bringing in local people to run the messaging of the campaign?
There's no truth to that I had the Florida Democratic Party. I don't know where that came from, but I really don't want to focus on the campaign, there's no truth to that.
No truth to that?
No, I mean, I think they were helpful, but they weren't running the campaign.
And here's another comment. Were you pressured to sign that local Charlotte's Web moratorium by the group pausepot.org? The city council reverse course on that, the moratorium on medical marijuana for sick children. Okay, so lots of questions have come in for you. We appreciate you being with us. And what are your final thoughts as you close out your term?
Well, I want to thank you, Melissa, and your leadership in our community. And thank you for having me on this morning. And you bring so many people on the show to talk about the good things in our city. And that's what I love about the show. And hearing all points of view. So I want to thank you for having me here. And I want to thank Jacksonville for giving me an opportunity to serve for 4 years. I'm very humbled and honored to have been the mayor of Jacksonville. I have a few more days left, and I thank God for this opportunity, and you'll see me around.
Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you.
We are joined by outgoing Mayor Alvin Brown. We've reached out to new Mayor Lenny Curry's transition team and hope to have him on the program once he takes office sometime in July, hopefully. Much more still ahead later. Why doctors are making sure that you stay safe this summer as you work, swim, and play. But up next, the Climate Change Toolkit. That's in today's Going Green.
Legal and political segments on First Coast Connect, brought to you by Farrah and Farrah.
Morning Edition is awake around the clock to bring you the latest news.
It's 2:10 in the morning, so still 5 hours left.
The hosts are usually here around 3:30.
You have Ophibia at 4,
uh-huh.
And it's about the Boko Haram ISIS news over the weekend.
Crunch time is 4 a.m.
until 5 when the show starts.
Hit it. Open.
Good morning, I'm David Green. With
Morning Edition, up all night to bring you all you need to know. Listen every weekday.
Weekday mornings starting at 5 on 89.9.
New name, new look. Join us for our annual Women's Health Conference, Girls Day Out, August 15th, Hyatt Regency Hotel. Morning keynote speaker, mental health advocate Jessie Close, who wants to change how people talk and think about mental illness. An ambassador for Bring Change to Mind, a not-for-profit organization founded by Jessie's sister, actress Glenn Close. Jessie fights stigma and misunderstandings to create a clear picture of mental disorders. Good for you. Girls Day Out is hosted by Baptist Health and WJCT. For a complete list of speakers or to purchase your tickets, log on to wjct.org/goodforyou.
Hi, I'm Rick Mullaney, Director of the Public Policy Institute at Jacksonville University. Join me for WJCT's quarterly program, Policy Matters. On each installment, we look at how public policy affects our lives. Join the conversation as we speak with incoming Jacksonville City Council President Greg Anderson. That's on the next Policy Matters, Tuesday morning at 9 on 89.9 WJCT.
The great online auction is back, June 19th through 29th. Shop from the comfort of your home and find exciting items at a fraction of retail. From barbecue to vacation getaways, we have something for everyone at every budget. All proceeds benefit WJCT. Log on to auction.wjct.org and start shopping today.
On the next Fresh Air, we hear about a program in the Watts community in L.A. where former gang members and drug dealers work on becoming better fathers.
We just have standing room only now. You know, it's something that they said wasn't going to work.
We talk with Mike Cummings, a former gang member, now a pastor and co-leader of the group, and social welfare professor Georgia Leap, author of the new book Project Fatherhood. Join us.
Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
Welcome back. Well, a local nonprofit dedicated to preserving North Florida's beauty is taking part in an interesting initiative, the North Florida Land Trust, helping to put together a climate change toolkit created by the Land Trust Alliance. Now, this toolkit is a technical resource and a planning tool for conservation groups around the country to assist in climate change planning. What does that mean? Well, Mark Hudson, Land Protection Director with the North Florida Land Trust, is here with more. It's our Going Green today. Hey, Mark, good morning.
Hi, Melissa. How are you doing?
I'm great, thanks. And a climate change toolkit, I picture like a box with stuff in it, but that's not really what it is. What is a climate change toolkit?
Well, it's a central kind of a data repository where anybody who is concerned about what climate change, sea level rise, any kind of impact from climate change might do to the natural environments can go and start planning and looking at other data resources to try to help them adapt in the future to climate change.
And how did the NFLT take part in this effort?
Well, we had started a couple years ago doing sea level rise planning of our own. We are a property owner, and we own several thousand acres of coastal real estate. And we were really kind of concerned, like many people who have their house on the beach, what is sea level rise going to do to us? And so we started doing our own planning. It turns out we are one of a very few group of conservation agencies across the country who have done this. And so we were asked by the LTA to participate in the creation of this toolkit. And for the last 2 years, we've been working on gathering case studies, GIS data, mapping data, all kinds of different resources, and putting it together for the general public to use.
So when you look at sea level rise here in North Florida, what are some of the potential impacts you've identified?
You know, a lot of things, everybody looks at the beach, and the beaches are definitely threatened by storms, but actually the greatest impacts are on the marshes. It's kind of the places, you know, we re-nourish our beach, which means that we build it up every time we dump new sand on it. But really, we look at a bunch of flooding in the marshes. A lot of things that really kind of shocked and surprised me is, you know, the St. John's River is tidal for pretty much all the way up to Lake Harney, 130, 140 miles. And so we were doing a lot of modeling of sea level rise impacts in Palatka and Green Cove Springs and Julington Creek, places like that where they were actually losing a lot of the swamp forests and they were actually going to have future flooding problems in those communities.
How do you see climate change planning becoming a collaborative effort, I guess, with groups like yours nationwide and even globally?
I mean, it's data sharing is absolutely essential. I mean, this is all a new field for everybody. And so we're working with groups in the Delaware Bay, in New York City, in Charleston Harbor, places like this, where we're all trying to figure out, in particular with the marshes and the wetlands and in the industry that I'm in, you know, how do we save them? Because a lot of them are going to disappear, going to be flooded under. In a natural community, they would retreat to new upland areas, but we built on them. And so we're trying to figure out together how we adapt to this, and it's a learning process. So this process of sharing information across the country is going to be absolutely essential if we're going to be able to do things right.
And how do you see Florida adapting to the sea level rise? There have been a number of scenarios predicted. It's probably impossible to say with certainty how much ocean sea level rise we'll see in this state. But of course, we're the most vulnerable in the 50 states, when it comes to the impacts of sea level rise.
Yeah, I mean, most of the models that predict these things have us anywhere between 2 to 6 feet, with 3 feet as kind of predicted as the most likely.
And that's by the year what?
2100.
Yeah, okay. So when people hear 2100, they think, well, that's so far away. I'm not worried about it. What would you say to people hearing you and talking about that timetable?
I would say that sea level rising happening now, and we're actually already getting negative impacts. So I was just meeting with a group of people who are talking about how it was impacting the stormwater system in Miami, where their stormwater outlets are now inundated 24/7. And so because there's nowhere for the water to go when there's a storm, it floods out Miami. Actually, San Marco, as we were discussing earlier, has the same problem. The stormwater outlets are right next to the water. And so when the water goes up on a high tide and we have a big rain, San Marco floods. Those problems are just going to get worse. And those problems are going to get worse, not in 2100, are bad now and are going to continue to get worse. And even for us, I mean, we have a beach where we've been doing, it's a critical nesting beach for sea turtles and these turtles called diamondback terrapins. And we've been working, trying to preserve it, but we've had massive erosion problems. And we actually took the modeling we did and we went back and looked from the beginning of the erosion problems and actually ran the model to see whether or not maybe sea level rise was creating those erosion problems that we're having now. And we actually confirmed it was. And so, I mean, we're already having impacts. Those impacts are going to be increasing up to 2100 and beyond, but they're really happening now.
Hmm. For people that aren't familiar with the North Florida Land Trust mission, can you explain that too?
Yeah, we are primarily a land acquisition entity. We actually try to purchase property for new parks, preserves, things like that. We do have about, currently hold on to about 3,200 acres or 3,400 acres, I'm sorry, of property here in the immediate Jacksonville area and always looking to do more.
It's Mark Hudson. He is the Land Protection Director for the North Florida Land Trust. Their climate change toolkit information can be found on their website. It's our Going Green today, and we thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
We're back in a moment with some summer safety tips from our own sponsor, Baptist Health. That's next.
This Going Green segment brought to you by Bug Out Service.
Follow what's happening at WJCT, even when you're away from your radio. You can follow WJCT on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can listen live online to WJCT-FM at wjct.org/listen, or on iTunes Radio or TuneIn Radio. And you can hear all of your favorite WJCT-FM shows anytime on demand on iTunes and Stitcher. Wherever you are, WJCT is there.
This week on Closing the Loop, Dolores West grew up in Miami, enlisted in the Army as a teenager, and married an older man. Her best skill is listening, and because of it, she's had opportunities come her way throughout her life. Closing the Loop, Fridays during Morning Edition and All Things Considered, on 89.9 WJCT.
Closing the Loop is sponsored in part by First Coast Home Pros, local specialists in carpet, grout, and upholstery cleaning.
Relax Radio WJCT 89.9 HD3 is your music station, playing the songs you remember best from the Beatles, Elvis, Frank Sinatra, Barbra Streisand, and Motown, 24 hours a day, only on WJCT 89.9 HD3. Learn more at wjct.org/relax.
WJCT, the Cultural Council of Greater Jacksonville, and Grassroots Natural Market are accepting submissions from local artists for The Square. The Square is an online venue where local artists share their work with the community and compete for a chance to be featured on WJCT TV and radio. Submit now through July 31st. To learn more about The Square and to submit your work, visit wjct.org/thesquare.
And welcome back. Well, finally, this hour, summer is officially here. And as you try to stay cool out there, health officials around town also want you to stay safe this season. We're going to talk about Baptist Health's new summer safety guide with Darren Rourke, Administrator of Emergency Services at Baptist. He's here with some very timely tips, and thanks for joining us.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
This is a great guide any family should have handy, and there's so much to talk about. But let's begin with the obvious. The sun is so hot right now. Sunscreen is so important. But you have a few specifics to talk about when it comes to sunscreen, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Here in Florida, the sun is very powerful. And during a hot summer day between the hours of 10 and 4, you can quickly burn in less than 10 minutes with some folks. I'm a pale Irish guy myself, and I generally have to coat on a 50-plus sunscreen before going out.
Me too. Yeah. Yeah, but so you advise 50-plus sunscreen for everyone.
Right, for the SPF. Our guide says at least a broad spectrum of 15, but if you have paler skin, you're going to need a 50-plus. And it's always, don't be shy about covering up, too, with some type of a UV protective clothing when you're out, because those items are available now on the market and can help too, so that when you're out in the sun, you can still get in the beach and in the water and enjoy.
Do you recommend choosing a sunscreen that's without oxybenzone? In recent years, there alarms have been sounded about certain types of sunscreen that they may screen out UV rays, but they actually are harming your health.
Absolutely. It pays to pay attention to the ingredients in anything we use these days. And certainly with sunscreen, that's important because you don't want to cause harm while trying to do good. I always call that trying to make sure you don't do the wrong thing while trying to do the right thing. But certainly pay attention to those ingredients and be, consumer savvy and look at the ingredients on the sunscreen when you're shopping at your local retailer.
Great tips in this PDF and this guide for parents, too, when it comes to watching your kids as they're swimming in the ocean or in the pool, and also reminding parents never to leave a child or a pet inside a parked car in this type of weather.
It's unfortunate, but we are a very distracted society. We have a lot of technology that we tend to focus on. And if you've been to your community pool, you can frequently find parents, surfing the internet or looking, answering a phone call or something of that nature, always staying in contact with what's going on around them. And those distractions, even for a minor 10 or 15 seconds, can go underwater, can tire out. And certainly when you're getting out of your vehicle driving these days is a challenge enough with the traffic, and make sure that you do not leave your child. Even if you're just running in to the dry cleaners to drop off the dry cleaning, it's very important to bring your child with you because cars warm up very, very, very quickly. Mm-hmm. And it you can suffocate in there, suffer heat stroke. It's very, very hot here in Florida, yeah. And we sometimes fail to remember just how dangerous that heat can be.
A car can be so dangerous so quickly, so can a pool.
Absolutely.
Every summer, we get our hearts broken by seeing that a child is drowned in a pool or a retention pond in this area.
There's not one of our emergency departments at Baptist that every year, unfortunately, does not have to take care of a child who has suffered from a near drowning or a drowning event. And our caregivers, it breaks our hearts, and we just want to make sure that we get this summer safety guide out there to the public and allow folks to read these subtle reminders to help stay safe in the summer when these accidents can occur.
Last but not least, if the 4th of July is right around the corner, you want to remind people not to blow their hands off if they're setting off some fireworks this holiday.
Fireworks are extremely dangerous. And again, that's, when you're running 6 emergency rooms in the city, we're sure to see a firework injury coming up on July 4th. And also this year, up until recently, we haven't had a lot of rain, so we have to be very careful not to start a local forest fire with some of the fireworks, and be very cautious because they're very dangerous. We want to celebrate. We want to have fun. Certainly enjoy our country's independence, but do it in a safe way.
Any other tips for people listening to you right now?
I would say that the most important thing is to continue to remember to keep an eye on your children. Know when you should seek emergency care, and know that where you go for emergency care truly does matter. And we at Baptist Health are here for you, and we hope you'll download our summer safety guide at BaptistJax.com. That's BaptistJax.com.
It's a great guide, lots of good information in it, easy to grab online. And we thank you so much for joining us. Great timely information for folks.
My pleasure. Be safe this summer.
He's Darren Rourke, Administrator of Emergency Services at Baptist Health. Their summer safety guide available now at BaptistJax.com. Have fun and be safe this summer. And that's our program. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Sean Birch. The show theme, composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Chevchik. If you've got feedback or questions or comments, just drop us an email. And make sure to catch our daily podcast. It's now up on iTunes. Next on Diane Rehm, audio streaming services and podcasts are changing the way we listen to music, get news, and find entertainment. The rising popularity of on-demand audio and what it means for consumers, creators, and advertisers. That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.